silence until the mob started pushing towards Sophie and Agatha again, and Beatrix blew her whistle. "What was that?" Agatha said to Kiko as she crankily signed an autograph.
"Her name is Yara," Kiko whispered. "No one knows how she got in. Doesn't speak, doesn't eat, far as we can tell, and disappears all the time. Probably has nowhere to live, poor thing, but the dean lets her stay out of the goodness of her heart. Some people think she's half stimpf."
Agatha frowned, thinking of the bony, carnivorous birds that hated Nevers. How can someone be half stimpf? She lost her train of thought because Sophie had culled the girls all to herself, smiling imperiously, signing autographs and kissing cheeks as if she'd finally found her way home.
"Can I help you fight boys?" Arachne hollered. "Can I be your vice-captain?" yelled Giselle.
"Can I be your vice-vice-captain?" echoed Flavia.
"Sit with my group for lunch," Millicent called. "No, sit with us," Mona countered.
"How glorious it is to have fans again," Sophie said, ignoring Agatha's horrified look and dotting an autograph with hearts.
"Here I am trying to get home where no one wants me, and instead stumble upon paradise where everyone does."
"If you're miserable with Beatrix, don't worry," Kiko said, noticing Agatha's glum face. "You can always stay with me."
Agatha turned to her, and Kiko suddenly understood.
"You aren't staying, are you?" Kiko rasped.
The crowd went silent around her.
"Now, tell me about this school play,"
Sophie said loudly to Rena.
"Have you cast the lead part?"
She stopped, for all the students had followed Agatha's gaze out the window. Across the bay, fog brewed thicker around the grisly red castle. "If we stay, we're starting war," Agatha said to the girls. "All of you would be in danger." She turned to Sophie. "You heard the professors. We can fix what I've done without anyone dying. Not you, not Tedros, not anyone here. We wish for each other, and we can forget this school ever happened." She touched her friend's shoulder.
"It's evil if we stay, Sophie. And you're not evil."
Sophie slowly gazed up at a sea of blameless girls who would, no doubt, die at the hands of Tedros and his red hoods. Only Agatha had forgotten the dean's warning. They could go home, as long as both of them meant their wish. But Sophie knew Agatha couldn't mean a wish for her friend. Agatha couldn't forget this school. Because a friend wasn't enough for Agatha any more. Agatha wanted a prince. "We'll hide in the Blue Forest and come up with a plan," Agatha said to her quietly, anxious to escape before the dean returned. "Maybe we can mogrify into the boys' school." Crestfallen, Sophie said nothing. Until she met her own eyes in the painting on the wall. Atop the castle, in her crystal crown, she looked just like someone she knew, with the same gold-spun blonde hair, emerald eyes and ivory skin. Someone who, too, had lost her happy ending to a boy. Someone who had died all alone because of it.
"You are too beautiful for this world, Sophie." It was the last thing her mother had ever said.
"She wanted me to find it," Sophie thought. This world where she wouldn't end like her mother. A world where she and Agatha would be happy forever. A world where a boy could never come between them. A world without princes. And only one prince stood in her way. Sophie gritted, tears glistening. A prince that Agatha would surely forget once he was dead.
"It isn't evil, Aggie," Sophie vowed. "This school is our only hope."
Agatha tightened. "Sophie,
What are you...
He says he wants me, Sophie bellowed to her waiting army. She bared teeth at Tedros's castle. Then let him come for me.
The girls let out a raucous cheer and mobbed their new leader.
Death to Tedros! Death to boys!
Agatha drained of colour as Sophie met her eyes and vanished into the swarm. One wish and she'd set a war in motion. A war between two sides fighting for her heart. A war between two people she loved. A war between her best friend and a prince. Agatha's soul scorched with guilt. A promise to a father gone up in flames. I need help, she prayed, watching Sophie blow kisses to her soldiers. Someone who could see through all this. Someone to tell her who was good this time and who was evil. As she retreated from the horde, she noticed an odd glint from the corner, hovering near the floor in Seda's dark nook of paintings. Slowly, two tiny yellow eyes floated towards her, like suspended marbles. Two more suddenly glowed next to them, then two more, as hunched shadows pattered from behind a marble column. The three black rats glowered at Agatha, as if she'd said the magic words. Then they skittered through the back doors to lead her to their master. Chapter 7 The Witches Brew a Plan.
So, let me get this straight.
Hester glared, straddling a gilded sink next to Anadil, both in their saggy black Nevers tunics.
Tedros wants to kill Sophie. Sophie wants to kill Tedros. And unless you find an ending with one of them now, everyone in the school dies.
Agatha nodded weakly, leaning against one of Honor Tower's ivory bathroom stalls, fitted with a sapphire toilet and tub. She never thought she'd be so happy to see two witches in her life. Unlike the rest of the girls, neither of them had changed. Hester's red and black streaked hair was greasier than ever, and the buck-horned red demon tattoo around her neck back to full colour after a failed spell had weakened it the year before. Anadil, meanwhile, looked even paler than she did before. If that was possible for an albino with ghostly white skin and hair. Straddling the sink next to Hester, she dangled a live lizard to her three black rats that looked just like the ones slain in last year's good evil war.
A prince and a witch willing to kill each other for you, she rasped in her scratchy voice. If it was me, I'd feel flattered.
She watched the rodents disembowel the lizard and lifted her hooded red eyes.
Thankfully, I don't have feelings.
Questionable. Who replaces dead pets with ones exactly alike?
Hester murmured. Look, I'm hungry, dirty, haven't slept, and an army of boys is trying to kill my best friend, Agatha said, voice cracking with stress. I just want us to go home alive.
And yet you wished for Tedros,
Hester said in her usual sharp sneer,
which seems to suggest you don't want to go home at all.
Agatha didn't say anything for a moment. Listen, just tell me what to do so no one gets hurt.
As if we're fairy godmothers, Annie,
Hester snorted, blowing smoke rings off her glowing red fingertip. Anadil graffitied a skull in the sink with her glowing green finger.
Only not as ancient or menial.
Please, Agatha begged. You're witches. You have to know another way to take back a wish.
So earnest,
Hester whirled and carved a box around Agatha's face in the mirror with her lit finger.
Just look at that helpless, lost little soul. Still wearing black and searching for the old Agatha. The Agatha who threw headless birds, farted in Evergirl's faces, and loved her precious Sophie more than life.
Hester met Agatha's reflected eyes and grinned.
But she's gone, Princess.
That's not true, Agatha retorted, but Reaper's scratches seared her hands as if they were fresh.
To think we once wanted you in our coven, Annadil said, and now here you are, afraid of hurting your best friend over a boy.
Nice to see you two haven't changed, Agatha muttered, trundling from the door. Reminds me why we weren't friends.
In the end, only one can make you happy, Hester purred behind her. The question is, who?
Agatha turned to see the witches slide off their sinks and circle her like sharks.
Sophie or Tedros?
Hester mulled.
Tedros or Sophie?
Annadil stewed. The two witches leaned against the sinks side by side.
This requires plenty of thought, said Hester, peering at Annadil.
Their heads whipped back to Agatha.
Tedros,
they chorused. Agatha's heart skipped, and she squelched it in shock. But that's wrong. I don't want a prince. Hester slid off the sink in one move.
Listen to me, you bug-eyed tramp. Unless you kiss Tedros, the schools stay the way they are,
she hissed, suddenly looking like the dangerous witch Agatha knew.
Kiss him, and everything is fixed. Prince with his princess, witch gone forever, ever's over here, never's over there, the school for good and evil back, in time for me to be third-year captain.
Agatha crossed her arms. I see. I'm worried about my best friend's life, and you're worried about school.
Do you know what you've done to this place, you waffling wench?
Hester snarled, black eyes storming.
Do you know what you've put us through?
She flung a wad of crumpled parchment from her pocket. Agatha unwrinkled a schedule, barely readable under all the graffiti. Hester of Bring Back Evil. Girl, second year. Honor, 42. Session 1. Debeautification. Faculty, Professor Emma Anemone and Pollux. 2. Princeless Power, Professor Clarissa Dovey. 3. Defense Against Boys, Lady Lesso. 4. History of Heroines, Professor Evelyn Sader. 5. Lunch. 6. Female Talents, Professor Sheba Sheeks. 7. Surviving Fairy Tales, Forest Group Number 3, Helga the Gnome. Agatha gaped at it. But these are about...
Girls, you stupid idiot! Everything at this school is about being a girl, Hester screeched. Do you know how hard I've tried to prove I'm more than a girl, and now I have to live in a castle full of them? You can't have a school without boys. Even we know that, and we'd rather kill ourselves than touch one.
We did dance with them at Evil's Ball,
Annadil corrected.
Shut up!
Hester boomed, spinning back to Agatha.
No one likes boys. Even girls who like boys can't stand boys. They smell, they talk too much, they mess up everything, and they always have their hands in their pants. But that doesn't mean we can go to school without them. It's like stimps without bones. It's like witches without warts. Without boys, life has no point.
Echoes shivered the mirror. Agatha held up the schedule. And the teachers are okay with this.
Why do you think they weren't at your welcoming?
Hester grouched, settling a bit.
They're as happy about this as we are, but they have no choice. Resist, and they'll suffer the same fate as Princess Uma.
Agatha saw the animal communication teacher wasn't on the schedule. Where is she?
The dean changed her class to animal hunting, since girls have to be self-sufficient and can't depend on boys for food. Part of the 5 rules,
Annadil puffed, turning the sink faucet on to terrorize her rats.
Uma refused to teach the class, of course, on the ground she wasn't going to kill animals she'd spent her whole life befriending.
She stroked her quivering, wet rats and looked up.
The next morning, a staircase evicted her into the woods.
She's probably better off, Agatha said, slightly relieved that she wouldn't have to learn more owl hoots and dog calls from the prissy pink princess. Then she saw Anadil still glaring at her.
Do you remember what's in the woods?
Agatha's chest clamped. Princes. Vengeful, bloodthirsty princes. Why didn't the Dean rescue her? Agatha croaked. They'll kill her.
You think that's bad?
Hester barked, blood engorging again.
Do you know how much Nevers hate bathrooms? Do you know how much our bile boils just being near one, let alone hiding in one with sapphire toilets? That's how much we don't want to go to the classes here.
She glowered so hatefully, Agatha swallowed her defense of Uma's fate as the worse.
You want Sophie to stay alive? You want to avoid war between boys and girls? You want your happy ending?
Hester's eyes burned into Agatha.
Kiss Tedros.
Agatha could feel her heart rebelling from its clamps. The correct ending, Professor Dovey had said. Agatha's cheeks splotched red. Betray her best friend. Abandon Sophie forever, after all they'd been through. I can't, she rasped and slumped against the stall door. A cough suddenly came from behind it. Hester bared sharp teeth.
What?
Can I come out now? Peeped a familiar voice.
You'll stay in there until you admit you're a traitor who no one likes and who is better off stabbing her own throat than ever showing her face again.
Hester lashed. Silence. Agatha, can I come out? Agatha sighed. Hello, Dot. The stall door slowly opened, and an Evergirl she'd never seen, with a slender waist and auburn curls, crept through first. Agatha gave her a baffled look and peeked in the stall for Dot. The stall was empty. Agatha slowly turned back to the stranger. But you're hungry all the time, Dot said, and pulled her into a long hug before Agatha drew away and gaped at her. Dot was 30 pounds lighter, with a light sheen of makeup, red lipstick and sparkled mascara. Her hair, brown with blonde highlights, was tightly curled and clipped with glittery yellow barrettes. She'd even rolled up her uniform's light blue bodice so it showed off her taut belly. You're not going to get rid of this school, are you? Dot fretted, nibbling on what looked like a clump of dried kale.
Here we go.
Daddy always told me I'd end up a fat, lonely villain like him, said Dot, eyes wet. But this place lets me be who I want to be, Agatha. I feel good here for the first time in my life, and these two make me feel so bad for it. They made so much fun of me for being fat, and now they insult me for being thin.
So you might as well die, said Hester.
You're just jealous because I have new friends, Dot snapped. The tattooed demon peeled off Hester's neck, inflated to life, and hurled a lightning bolt at Dot's head. Dot dove into a bathtub, and the bolt blasted a hole in the marble wall. A tiny girl on her bed, reading Why Men Don't Matter, gawped through the hole and fled her room. Grumbling, Hester summoned her demon back into her neck. Dot peeked at Agatha from the tub, now snacking on what looked like a star-shaped carrot.
She's mad because everyone else likes the Dean. I like that she can't make us wear that buffoonery, Hester said, scowling at Dot's blue bodice. Professor Sheik secretly taught us a charm that made us erupt in contagious boils any time we put on the uniform. After 2 days of screaming girls, the Dean gave up.
How could she just take over? Agatha said, bewildered.
You have to remember how bad things were between boys and girls when you left, said Hester. The most eligible prince in school lost his princess to a bald, toothless witch. Boys suddenly saw girls as the enemy, and girls saw the boys as bullies. When the schools changed to boys and girls, it already felt as divided as good and evil. The dean just made things worse.
But where did she come from? Asked Agatha. She says she's Seda's sister.
All we know is the night the schools changed to boys and girls, Professor Dovey couldn't get back into her office, said Annadil. She and Lesso tried to get it open for hours, and when they finally did, Dean Seda was sitting at the desk.
But how'd she get in? Agatha said, frowning. And why don't they fight her?
For one thing, the male teachers tried, said Annadil, and they haven't been seen since.
Agatha stared at her.
As long as Dovey and Lesso had the story and we had a chance at peace, Hester pressed. But now you kissing Tedros is the only hope, because there is no way to fight the Dean.
She glared into Agatha's eyes.
The castle's on her side.
As Sophie followed the Dean through the blue breezeway from Honor Tower to Valor Tower, girls kept popping up in their path, saluting Sophie like a ship captain.
"Death to the prince," a pimply girl squeaked.
"Long live Sophie and Agatha,"
chimed an elfish Evergirl. Sophie forced a fraught smile as she tried to keep up with Dean Seda through the glass tunnel over the lake. As she walked, the Dean squinted out at distant princes clamouring outside the school gates, testing Lady Lesso's shield with rocks and sticks. Her thick red mouth pursed slightly, and she walked faster, hips swishing in a dress that seemed so much tighter than all the other teachers. Hustling behind, Sophie peered at the Dean's reflection in the breezeway. She'd never seen anyone so beautiful, even her own mother. Proportions exactly out of a storybook. Rose petal lips, hair so lustrous and full, as if the Dean had been drawn to a page and brought to life. What did she use on her skin? Even thistle root can't get pores that small, Sophie thought, comparing them in the polished glass to her own. Her bald, toothless reflection snarled back at her, covered in warts. Sophie choked with terror and closed her eyes. No, I'm good. I'm good now. She opened her eyes to see her creamy, smooth face once more. Sophie? Heart racing, Sophie turned to see the Dean frowning at the end of the breezeway. Quickly, Sophie hastened to keep up, legs quavering as more girls passed and saluted her.
Death to Tedros! Death to the prince!
When you said slay Tedros, Sophie fumbled anxiously, you didn't mean I'd slay him, or that I'd be involved in anything evil.
Given your past history, I thought you'd be looking forward to it, the Dean mused.
Sophie wiped sweat. It's just, I know I have a rather fearsome reputation, but I've changed, you see.
Have you?
The Dean gave her a pointed look.
In the gallery, you seemed quite ready to lead a war.
Well, one must project the carriage of leadership, Sophie said, dripping sweat now. But, in truth, my witch days are long past, so perhaps it's best if someone currently evil kills Tedros. Might I suggest Hester or Annadil? Both rather loathsome villains.
The boy who wants to steal your only friend, and you're afraid of a fight.
Sophie slowly looked up at the Dean, grinning outside the entrance to Valor Tower.
Perhaps because you don't know what it is you're fighting for. The doors magically opened,
and Sophie gasped. The walls on both sides of the crowded stairwell, stretching all the way up the five floors, were painted with colossal, stylized stencil murals of her and Agatha's smiling faces, haloed with wreaths of stars above the glittering blue headline, Hope for a Better World. Instead of the musky leather cologne smells and animal skins of the old Valor Tower, now there were lush hanging gardens draped over the blue glass stairwell and marble columns with azure-coloured roses that showered the mob of students with petals as they headed to class before low-hanging vines swept them up. As Sophie followed the dean up the stairs, girls immediately moved to the left in single file, clearing a path and greeting them with warm smiles as they passed. Through the spiral banister, Sophie saw a pack of blue butterflies zooming from floor to floor, rearranging into pictures to amuse the descending girls, a stimpf, a nymph, a swan. The dean gave them a look, and with squeaky, meeps, they zipped back into her dress. She turned off onto the third floor, and Sophie followed into a hall flurrying with activity. Against the walls, ever-girls and never-girls huddled side by side, watching a ghostly scene unfold atop the pages of A Student's Revised History of the Woods, to finish an assignment. Above their heads, murals of an idyllic school of girls presiding over enslaved boys, watermarked with Sophie's and Agatha's deified faces, stretched down the long dormitory walls. Rena darted to each of them with plates of poached eggs and pumpernickel toast, while Arachne passed mugs of chocolate buttermilk. In a corner, a group of girls practiced oboes, fiddles, and trumpets, though Sophie couldn't tell which were evers or nevers, since they all had ragged hair and no traces of makeup. Standing on ladders over the stairwell, Mona and Millicent finished painting pink roses on banisters, a rich shade of blue, dripping paint onto girls sparring with wooden swords, while Kiko hopped past, flinging sheets of parchment.
"Book club meeting tonight. Come to book club."
Before she was drowned out by Giselle and Flavia practicing a loud song from sheet music. All around, doors chorused open and shut as girls scurried to their rooms from the welcoming and rushed right back out with their books for class, unfussed by sweaty faces and armpits. Sophie thought of the old schools. Nevers bashing each other to get to classes, evers primping for hours and hours, everyone in such terrible competition between schools, within schools, all the time. And now, here they were. Despite the sweatiness and raggedness and satanic smell of buttercream, thriving together, happy together, without a boy in sight. "How can Agatha not want this?" she breathed.
"Some will always resist change," the dean said next to her. "Agatha is a princess, and still believes she needs a prince. Surely you know the power of that fantasy."
Sophie thought of all the hope, all the energy, all the time she had put into her princely dreams. The conviction that a gorgeous boy of noble blood would sweep her to his white castle and eternal bliss. Agatha had taunted her ruthlessly for it before the schoolmaster kidnapped them. "As if this muscle-bound god would even understand you," Agatha scoffed. "We'd be better off together." She'd given her usual pig snort to make sure it sounded like a joke, but Sophie knew she meant it. Agatha always thought the two of them were enough for ever after. But had her friend fallen under the spell? Had Agatha started to believe in the same fantasy she once mocked? Sophie's stomach sank. Had she and Agatha switched places? "She wants to see him," Sophie said softly. The dean's face hardened, and she shunted Sophie behind the stairwell as girls streamed by.
If she kisses him, all is lost.
She'd never kiss him, not if it means losing me.
She wished for him, Sophie, the Dean pressed, gripping Sophie close. Wishes are born of the soul. Deny them, and they only grow stronger. Sophie's insides went cold. Leaning in, the Dean took her cheeks into her gilded nails. She's not the girl you knew, Sophie. There is a thorn in her heart, and it has to be cut out. Sophie nestled into the Dean's shoulder. I just want my friend back, she whispered. And you will, when her prince is dead. The Dean stroked her hair. You'll stay together always, no boy between you, ever again. Sophie's eyes misted. She wanted to hide in the Dean's arms forever.
Tell me what to do.
Keep them apart, the Dean said, pulling away sharply. Make Tedros fight us. When he does, you and your army will be ready.
But I don't want to fight, Sophie stammered, feeling warts burn as if they were there. I want to be good now.
And let your friend kiss her prince, the Dean said, glaring at her. Let her banish you to an ordinary life in a world of no consequence. She edged closer. Friendless. Loveless. Forgotten. Sophie's voice left her. Wasn't that your mother's ending? The Dean asked, closer still. Her lips grazed Sophie's ear. And what became of her? Sophie lost all colour. A hand grabbed hers and she shrieked in surprise.
Don't worry,
Beatrix chimed to the Dean, dragging Sophie away. I'll show her the room and her uniform and her schedule.
She put her arm around Sophie and yanked her down the hall.
Can you believe we once fought over a boy?
Speechless, Sophie glanced back at the Dean against the wall mural, smiling at her like a mother to a child. As the Dean receded into the hall's darkness, the last Sophie saw was her glowing green eyes blending into those of her own muraled face, crowned above a princeless world. A world where her best friend would never betray her again. Sophie gritted her teeth. As long as Agatha didn't kiss Tedros, they had a chance.
Agatha sat on the edge of the tub in dazed silence, knocking a soap bar to the floor. All she could think about was where she would be right now if she hadn't made the wish. Her mother would be stewing lunch, garlic and liver, and the smell from the cauldron would mix with the ashy winds seeping through broken windows. On her bed, she'd be rushing to finish her grammar homework due at afternoon lesson. Curled in a corner, Reaper would hiss at her, but a little less than yesterday. As she slurped up the last of the stew, she'd hear the weeds crackle, the soft humming, the glass heels on the porch.
Walk to school, Sophie'd say.
They'd amble down the hill in their black and pink winter coats, cracking jokes about the barn-smelling boys in their class.
Let them try to marry us, Sophie would say.
And she would laugh, because once upon a time it was true. They had each other, and would never need more.
How could I ruin it? She said, voice breaking.
She looked up at the three girls. How could I wish for him?
Because you're a princess, Agatha.
Hester's face softened for the first time.
And no matter how much you fight it, you want a prince.
Agatha swallowed the knot in her throat. She looked up at Annadil, who nodded next to Hester and waited for Dot to concur. She didn't. The two witches shot her with sparks.
Ow! Okay, fine,
Dot moped, munching on star-shaped celery.
Even if it means I go back to evil and be fat and have no friends again.
Agatha shook her head. Look,
Sophie just has to forgive me and everything will be...
Forgive you? Hester cackled. Her faithful Agatha, soiled by the boy once hers. And you expect the Witch of Woods Beyond to forgive? Oh, please. Inside, Sophie wants you cut up in little pieces.
You don't get it, Agatha said hotly. Sophie's changed. She's good. Even Annadil's rats snickered.
She's a never, Agatha, Dot said. No matter how much you love her, no matter how much you try to change her, Sophie will end evil and alone.
And not class captain, Hester mumbled.
Annadil kneeled in front of Agatha.
You will never mean your wish for Sophie, Agatha, because you and Sophie will never be happy in your world.
For once, Annadil's red eyes looked human.
You'll always end up back here again, wishing for your prince, and Sophie will always be the witch, keeping you and him apart, until you kiss Tedros.
Her cold white hand took Agatha's wrist.
Don't you see? Your wish was right.
Agatha sat on the tub in silence. It was as if she was caught in another riddle, and once again only a schoolmaster had the answer. This time Sophie couldn't come with her. I have to see Tedros alone, she said quietly. Dot nodded. It's the only way you'll know if you're meant to be with him. And what if I'm not? Asked Agatha, thinking of all the reasons she hated her prince right now. What if I still want to go home with Sophie?
Then we'll help you,
Annadil groused. Agatha thought of Sophie's face in Seda's office, lethal and ice-cold. But how do I see him without her knowing? We're in the same room.
Leave it to us, said Hester, gnawing on the ends of her red and black hair. But it has to be tonight. I can't survive another day of class.
Agatha felt an odd relief, as if caught in a ferocious storm and suddenly given a glimpse of the eye. After all this, she would see Tedros. No matter what happened, there'd be hope after. A road to happiness. A choice made. Hunched on the tub, she suddenly focused on the star-shaped bar of soap on the floor. She lifted her gaze to the star-shaped cucumber in Dot's hand. You'd think it'd be easier than chocolate, Dot sighed, turning another soap into a turnip. But for a while, everything just turned to Gouda cheese. Annadil covered her mouth. The girls tracked her wide eyes to a blue butterfly fluttering in through the smashed hole in the wall. Agatha snorted. It's just a butterfly. Hester shot her with sparks from her finger, and Agatha gasped in pain. The tattooed witch glowered at her, and with her red-lit finger drew smoky words in the air. She's listening. Agatha shook her head, confused. Hester and Annadil counted down on their fingers. 5, 4, 3, 2. The bathroom door creaked open and a head poked through.
There you are, Agatha, the dean said as the butterfly drifted back into her dress pattern. Class starts in 5 minutes, and you're not in uniform. Not the best way to start your first day.
She flashed a black look at Hester and Annadil, as if this included their company. Her eyes drifted down to the hole in the wall behind them, which instantly filled in and repaired itself.
Destruction of property is a rather masculine trait, she said to the two witches, her tone glacial.
Then she smiled approvingly at Dot.
I suggest you two learn from your roommate how to behave like women. Or you never know. The castle might teach you the same lesson it taught the boys.
Hester and Annadil bowed their heads nervously, which made Agatha even more wary of the dean. She remembered the odd feeling that she was eavesdropping during the welcoming. As a blue butterfly perched on Sophie's shoulder, Agatha drew a breath. The butterfly in the woods, the one in the flower ground. The dean had been there all along, leading them here, and she'd heard every word.
"Shall we, dear?"
The dean held open the door with long, sharp nails. Muscles tensed, Agatha followed her out, but kept her eyes pinned on the mirror, just in time to see Hester's reflection raise furious black eyes and mouth the last command.
"Tonight."
Chapter 8. Unforgiven.
"We'll be late for your first challenge," Beatrix frowned from the door, two satchels of books in hand.
Sophie didn't move, glaring at Agatha.
"Now you want to stay?"
she said leerily, perched on the middle bed in her school uniform, a crystal diadem glittering on her head.
"You said it was evil to stay."
Back turned, Agatha stared at the painting splashed across the wall. Once a vision of dashing princes kissing their princesses, now a life-size mural of her kissing Sophie back to life in a starburst of blue light. "I'm just seeing him. I'm not choosing him. I'm just seeing him."
"What about seeing Tedros?"
Sophie lashed, remembering the dean's warning.
"What about seeing your prince?"
Agatha didn't answer.
"Well?"
Sophie pushed. Agatha turned, pale limbs jutting from her uniform, diadem slipping down her hair. "I'm still here, aren't I?" Sophie exhaled, the dean's echo trickling away. Like the schoolmaster, the dean couldn't fathom the strength of their friendship. Agatha would never go to Tedros. They'd been through too much.
"You forgive me?"
Agatha asked, surprised by Sophie's silence. Sophie looked up, smiling to answer, but suddenly Sophie wasn't seeing Agatha any more. Suddenly, all Sophie saw was the girl who'd wished for a boy, the girl who'd stabbed her in the back, the girl who'd ruined their ever after. An old fire of suspicion kindled inside. "Forgive her," Sophie thought, fighting it, but her muscles were clenching, her fists curling. "The good forgive." But now her heart swelled to a witch's rage. With a gasp, Sophie flung off the bed and hugged Agatha, jostling her friend's tiara.
"Oh, Aggie, I forgive you. I forgive you for everything. I know you'd never go to him."
Agatha reddened, averting her eyes. "What is this cursed thing?" she murmured, diadem now somehow in her mouth.
"Duh, your captain grounds,"
Beatrix crabbed, foot tapping impatiently.
"You were the top ever when you left, and Sophie was the top never."
"Well, we're on the same side now."
Sophie beamed and gripped Agatha's hand. Agatha felt her palm sweat and let go to grab a satchel of books from Beatrix.
"Your rankings start over today, though," Beatrix said, "if we ever get to your first challenge."
As Sophie followed Beatrix's bald head out, she glanced back at Agatha, who was frowning at the book spines in her satchel. "Men, the Savage Race. Happiness Without Boys, A Princess's Guide to Princelessness."
"Ready for our new school?" Sophie said, holding open the door.
Agatha looked up and did her best to smile back. Professor Anemone gave Agatha a loaded glare as she trudged into her blue, taffy-coated classroom for de-beautification without any of her usual manic flounce. 20 girls straightened to attention in neat rows.
"This week we continue to de-beautify everything a prince expects of his princess."
Professor Anemone huffed, bright yellow gown devoid of the brassy jewels, feathered bustiers, soaring headdresses, and fur regalia she used to parade. The classroom, too, had been stripped of all her old beautification flourishes, including her antique mirrored station from Pootsy, before and after portraits of her most improved students, and shelves upon shelves of grooming equipment. Now all that was left were the white fudge desks, a licorice chalkboard, and blue taffy walls watermarked with Sophie's smiling face and a marshmallow speech bubble. Beauty is a state of mind.
To review,
Professor Anemone grouched, flashing Agatha another blameful scowl.
First, we de-beautified diets as insidious plagues and encouraged a girl to eat anything her heart desires, even candy.
Agatha coughed. Professor Anemone reviled Candy so much she'd once punished her with 2 weeks of scrubbing dishes for eating it. Yet the Evergirls didn't seem at all fazed by this about-face. Indeed, Agatha noticed a few holes in Rena's fudge desk, and suddenly her plumper appearance was no longer a mystery.
Second, we de-beautified hair and a prince's preference for long, lustrous locks, the teacher continued, instead advocating that each girl experiment and find a style that feels right.
Agatha saw her grimace as she took in Giselle's blue mohawk, Beatrix's hairless pate, and Millicent's dirty red mop, hair that Professor Anemone's old class had once spent months grooming to perfection.
Third, we de-beautified makeup as a pawn of patriarchy designed entirely to attract men, the teacher went on, wincing at the sea of unwashed faces, proudly worn blemishes, and nevers who applied it curiously like 2-year-olds left to face paint. And today, we move on to our fourth unit.
She turned to the chalkboard, words appearing as she moodily slashed her finger across it. De-beautifying pink. The last letter appeared with a nails-on-board squeak, and girls shielded their ears.
From last night's reading, the teacher grumped, what are 3 reasons why pink must be exterminated?
Agatha frowned. Professor Anemone worshipped pink.
Yes, Beatrix, her teacher said, for Beatrix was waving her arm like she needed to pee. Because pink is a colour associated with weakness, helplessness, and anxiety. But Professor Anemone, another reason, Dot?
Because pink is the opposite of blue, a colour of strength and serenity which boys have appropriated for themselves without giving girls a choice.
Dot preened, earning high fives from her Evergirl coterie. Hester slingshot her with a shard of taffy, and Dot yelped.
Professor Anemone, Beatrix interrupted. You had a turn, Beatrix. Arachne, the last reason?
Because pink is a sign of infection around a cut, and pink eye means you have fungus in your eye.
Take this as a reminder to do your reading before you answer, Arachne.
Professor Anemone snapped, adding under her breath, and a reminder why evers and nevers should be in different schools.
What is it, Beatrix?
Professor Anemone, why are you wearing pink?
Professor Anemone tracked her eyes to a heart-shaped pink barrette clipped in her own wild blonde hair. Her cheeks ballooned red, about to blow. Then she saw a butterfly on the windowsill.
Oh dear, am I?
She magically turned the barrette blue with her finger.
Turning a bit colour-blind in middle age. Now, please hand in your homework diaries on what steps you've taken to de-beautify.
She stomped through the rows of girls to collect them, giving the butterfly a dirty look as it flew away, presumably because it could only hear and not see. Agatha scanned the loamy blue walls, once the same colour as Sophie's favourite pink dress, before the dean had her way with it. Agatha never liked pink. It reminded her of baby vomit.
But why shouldn't Professor Anemone decorate her classroom how she liked? She glanced at Sophie in the next desk, ogling her watermarked face on the taffy walls. Allergies to candy were cured by celebrity, it seemed.
Aggie, I've been thinking, Sophie said, turning to her. Why do you think Tedros hasn't tried to see you?
What?
You've been here all morning. No Romeo sneaking through your window. No lover's embrace. He hasn't even sent you a note.
Agatha stiffened. Doesn't matter, does it? She said, and feigned listening to the teacher.
Well, it's even more reason not to try and see him. Sophie sighed, polishing her captain's crown. Who knows if he even wants you to? In any case, we have our first three classes together, then we have different schedules. Wonder why the dean separated us. Don't think we're even in the same forest group.
Her voice trailed off as Agatha gazed out the window at Halfway Bridge, obscured by swirling grey fog. She was still thinking about what Sophie had just said. Why hasn't Tedros tried to see me? A blue beret dropped on her desk and clinked to the floor. As she reached for it, a hand seized hers.
Clarissa is livid,
Professor Anemone hissed in her ear.
You must seal your ending with Sophie or Tedros immediately.
She silenced because the door swung open and Pollux the dog staggered through, or rather, his head staggered through. Wobbling atop an antelope's body, he clearly didn't know how to use.
Sorry I'm late, he said, raising his nose snootily. I had private counsel with the dean about the need for more aggressive pink removal. Indeed, I found a thread of it in the fourth-floor carpet and had it exterminated at once.
Agatha and Sophie exchanged startled looks, for both were undoubtedly thinking the same thing. As one half of a two-headed dog, Pollux frequently lost the battle to use their body to his brother, Castor, who taught in evil. Since Castor was a vicious male dog, Agatha wasn't surprised he was evicted from the castle with the boys, but up until now, she'd been quite sure Pollux was...
Male too?
She whispered to Hester behind her. Hester eyed Pollux's weak jaw, scanty fur, and rosy nostrils.
I'd say he has about as much male in him as there is pink left in that carpet.
My dear Professor Anemone, Pollux said in his strident voice, I believe there was an unfortunate incident involving a pink beret this morning. Perhaps I should administer today's challenge, if you're not up to your best.
Professor Anemone glared blackly. What about your pink nose? Pollux looked like he'd been slapped.
It's an inherited condition.
Since choosing a challenge is the one freedom I'm still allowed, Professor Anemone said to the students, today's competition will be...
The door opened again.
What now?
The dean slipped in with a warm smile.
Since it's our captain's first day, Emma.
Perhaps it might be more appropriate if I choose the challenge.
Professor Anemone muttered grimly and dumped herself at her sour candy desk.
Pollux, dear, said the dean,
sashaying in front of Professor Anemone's desk,
might we remind our captains how rankings are awarded?
Certainly, dean, Pollux sniffed. All students in the School for Girls are ranked in class challenges from first to last. Given there are 20 students in each class, the best performer in a given challenge will receive a rank of 1, with the most feeble student receiving a rank of 20. These ranks will determine whether you are tracked as a leader, a follower, or a mogriff. The last referring to those girls who will undergo transformation into animals or plants.
Students murmured,
perhaps having forgotten that in this world, free of good and evil, some of them would still end up newts or ferns.
"Given our new and improved school," Pollux continued, "the dean has chosen to wait until the start of third year to award tracks, so I suggest you continue to mind your ranks with urgency."
"And perhaps, Pollux,"
the dean cooed as she sat on the desk, backside in Professor Anemone's face,
"there is another reason why now is a good time for the girls to mind their ranks."
"Groom room," Agatha mumbled, remembering the medieval makeover spa that once rewarded the highest-ranked girls. Hester shook her head.
"Incinerated. Part of debeautification."
"Of course, Dean," Pollock said. "As you know, odorous and poorly dressed princes have been gathering in force at the wood's gate, ready to kill one of our own. With our captain's arrival today, they will no doubt redouble their efforts. Though our castle enchantments have kept the princes out thus far, we must be alerted if they fail. Thus, beginning tonight, the two students with the lowest rankings at day's end will stand guard at the wood's gate from dusk until dawn."
Agatha grimaced as girls buzzed around her. Last year, failing in good and evil meant being turned into a guard for the opposite side. This year, girls who failed in their lessons against boys would get slaughtered by them first. So much for new and improved.
"The first challenge is called Unforgiven," the dean said. "In order to protect each other in the war to come, you must learn to resist the attraction of men. Each of you will face a phantom boy from your past for whom you've had feelings. Slay him ruthlessly, even if you want to forgive. He is the enemy now, and sees you as the same. The more savagely you kill him, the higher your rank."
Agatha tensed. She and Sophie would face the same boy. Beatrix went first. The dean pointed a sharp nail at her heart and, as if carving with a knife, drew out a wisp of blue-lit smoke that congealed into a phantom and stepped from Beatrix's body like a shadowed self. Chaddick, the burly, grey-eyed ever-boy who had once asked her to the ball, bent to one knee before her in a haloed blue haze and held forth a rose with a dashing smile. Beatrix stabbed her glowing finger and blasted him to dust.
"Come a long way, hasn't she?"
Annadel mused to her spooked rats, peeking from her pocket. Professor Anemone was hopping with fury.
"Evelyn, this challenge is cruel, nefarious, and hasn't the slightest to do with debeautification,"
she fired, standing at her desk.
"So I suggest you..."
She stopped, because Candy Claws had magically grown out of the desk and gripped her by both shoulders, preparing to evict her.
"Suggest I what?" the dean asked.
"Continue,"
Professor Anemone rasped, and the candy claws vanished back into the desk. The girls resumed buzzing for their turn, clearly siding with the dean. Meanwhile, Hester glowered at Agatha with a told-you look. As more students took turns against their hearts' blue phantoms, Kiko struggled to dispatch red-haired Tristan, Giselle made tan Nicholas grow braids that strangled him, Dot bombed when she could only give weasel-faced Hort a pimple, Agatha's thoughts drifted back to Tedros. She could barely admit it, but Sophie was right. Her prince would have come somehow if he wanted to see her. Suppose she'd missed his note, or the dean had intercepted it. Should she still go through with the witch's plan tonight? Agatha swallowed a scream. Have I gone mad? Risking her best friend's life for a boy she barely knew.
She thought about Sophie's lit-up face in their room, so relieved that they'd made peace. This wasn't about evers and nevers. This wasn't a battle between a prince and a witch. This was about her and Sophie, striving to forgive each other's mistakes, fighting to save a friendship. Agatha winced at the irony. She had forgotten the lesson Sophie had